Welcome to another episode of the NESG Radio Podcast. On this day, we're celebrating the World Youth Skills Day 2025. And our theme for this podcast today is unlocking opportunities, how AI and digital skills can empower the next generation of youth in Nigeria. World Youth Skills Day is observed annually on the 15th of July and is a United Nations initiative aimed at celebrating the importance of equipping young people with skills for employment, decent work, and entrepreneurship. This year's theme, Youth Empowerment Through AI and Digital Skills, underscores the urgent need to prepare youth for a fast-evolving, technology-driven future. In Nigeria, where over 60% of the population is under the age of 25, AI and digital technology offers transformative potential from education to health, agriculture to governance. Digital tools are rapidly reshaping how services are delivered and how young people live, learn, and work. Yet, this transformation also comes with growing concerns around digital inequality, unemployment, and the skills gap between the demands of the global economy and the training many young Nigerians currently receive. Today, we are so glad to be joined by two distinguished panelists and youths themselves on this podcast today. And first on the list of our resource person is Mr. Ebenezer Wikina, who is the politics and governance lead at the NESG Community of Practice on Youth and is the founder of Policy Shapers. He has over 15 years of experience working with more than 40 organizations. He's the founder of Policy Shapers and a convener of the Rivers 2050 Vision, a 25-year development blueprint for River State. He has previously worked at change.org and led the Reform ILCS campaign, which mobilized over 80,000 supporters and influenced English language policy reforms in 32 universities worldwide. He's a member of the World Economic Forum's Expert Network, a Mandela Washington Fellow, and an alumnus of the Harvard Kennedy School and the London School of Journalism. You're welcome, Mr. Ebenezer, but today allow me to call you Eben. Welcome, Eben.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Next is Victoria Oladipo, who is the founder of Learn Politics Nigeria and also a member of the Politics and Governance thematic group of the Youth COP. She has extensive academic background in the discipline and supported by a bachelor's and master's degree in political science and international relations, with a profound interest in the complexities of policy formulation and politics. Her mission is to facilitate a more profound comprehension of political intricacies and enable citizens to actively participate in processes of governance. As part of her responsibility at the Faith Foundation, Victoria supports the Research and Policy Division through policy seminars, dialogue sessions to aid in the advancement of research and policy making. Motivated by a desire to democratize political education, Victoria established Learn Politics NG, an organization committed to furnishing individuals with engaging and easily accessible materials that foster comprehension of the intricacies of politics. Her objective with Learn Politics NG is to provide individuals with information and abilities required to engage in governance actively and to shape political conversation. Welcome to the podcast, Victoria, and so good to have you on here.
Thank you for having me.
So let's jump right into it. I'll start with you, Victoria. You work with Learn Politics Nigeria, and your work is to simplify political knowledge for everyday Nigerians. In what ways can AI help make civic education even more accessible and engaging for young people across social and educational divides?
Thank you very much for this question. Recently, we've seen the improvement of tech and AI in different facets of life and in different aspects of life. But how can we use tech and AI to improve civic education? Then we have what we call like civic tech organizations now that are using technology to advance accountability, open governance, and now we've come into the space with civic education. How we do this majorly is having materials that are easily accessible to young Nigerians so that they are able to take these materials and use them in the ways they have to use them, especially gaining more knowledge about politics and civic duties generally. There is also the fact that AI can help in simplifying this information that have already been gotten and to be able to distill it easily for young Nigerians to be able to learn more and at the tip of their fingers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Victoria. Let me come to you, Eben, because I know that you've worked on global campaigns like the Reform IELTS that we mentioned and currently leading Rivers 2050 Vision. How do you see AI and digital tools transforming how young Nigerians advocate for and influence policy, especially at subnational levels?
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you so much, Stephen, for that question. And thanks Vicky as well for the points that she just made. I think that the digital platform and AI technology generally can or has made it easier for young people to organize. We can now organize in a safer and in a more constructive way. I mean, you spoke about the Reform IELTS campaign. That was purely a digital campaign. We didn't at any point need to see ourselves physically or meet to convene for a protest in a physical location. It was purely done with digital tools. The petition was digital. The signatures we took were digital. The data sets that we continue to share were digital. So all of those things, I think, are kind of like an example of how it's a safer way. And despite it being digital, we're still able to make impact, just as you said, with over 32 universities around the world, the UK, Canada, US, changing their policies. I think AI and the digital space also makes it easier for young Nigerians to get access to information. There's so many civic tech organizations like Victoria mentioned who are making this more accessible. In fact, recently, Budget had launched an AI tool called BIMI. And what BIMI does is that BIMI makes it easier for you to get access to budgets and financial information. So the same way you ask ChatGPT or any of these other AI agents about any kind of The same way you ask ChatGPT and all these other AI agents about any kind of information, BIMI makes it possible for you to ask about budget information or any other like financial information from the public space. So that's another example of how AI is doing that. I think as Nigeria also like approaches the election season, there'll be a lot of like promises and statements that will be going on. I think AI makes it easier for us to fact check things, right? Mm. Unlike the time where you had to have like only dedicated organizations who would be able to fact check things. I think now if everyone has access to tools at their fingertips where if someone says something, everyone can go fact check it. We can all go read about it now. AI has organized information for us in a way that is easier for us to process it faster and also understand itself quicker as well. So I think these are some of the ways amplifying our voices, making it easier for us to organize in a safe space, also making information as well readily available to us.
Yeah. Quite interesting that you mentioned the issue of having a safe space, but there are still some ethical dilemma involving this. And as someone deeply engaged in governance, what ethical consideration should guide how young people leverage AI in political mobilization and civic engagement?
Yeah, I think we need to lead by example as young people. So many of us young people have ideologies on how we think Nigeria should be, right? We are fully engaged. We're engaged in the past elections. We're going to be engaged in the coming elections, and also we should be engaged in the day-to-day governance as well. I think that it gives us a unique opportunity, basically, to ensure that we're speaking from a place of truth. When we also do use AI information or things that are generated by AI, I think that we should also credit it to AI if these are positive things. I think also we should also fight fake news. People shouldn't be sharing content that is generated by AI that is not true for propaganda means. You know, so I think as youth, we need to actually like lead by example and show positivity. You mentioned like the subnational visioning project that we're working on. So in the Rivers 2050 vision project, we've used AI to imagine the future in the sense that we've looked at all the thematic areas that we're working on within the project, 15 of them. What would the future of real estate be like if you think about healthcare or education or, you know, security, etc. And we use AI to like imagine images, and AI has imagined what the city could be like. That's the city of Port Harcourt and the state in general. And we're using those things now as advocacy tools to advocate, to say like, this is what we can be, you know, like we need to like dream bigger as a people. So I think that's an example of one way where we could use AI as part of policy advocacy as well as youth.
Thank you very much, Eben. Let me come to you, Victoria. Many young people are interested in politics, but they feel very disconnected from policymaking. How can digital skills help close this gap and increase youth agency in governance?
Thank you very much. For young people that are interested in politics, I'm just going to start from the problem that we've had. The problem we've generally had is that when we were very young, when we were in primary or secondary schools, there was not very good response to understanding politics for young people, especially the fact that the curriculum was not very holistic to carry the depth of how much our politics is. And that is why now that we've grown older, tech has become bigger, AI is now very much in play, we need to think of how we can use these digital tools to help them to understand politics better. One of the ways is we can have WhatsApp bots that will make it very accessible, because a very large number of Nigerian youth use WhatsApp, and we can use it to simplify laws, we can use it to simplify policies, explain citizens' rights, and making them more accessible to these youth. Also, we can think of using social media, which is part of the digital tools, short explainer videos in the ways that young people can understand to help them to assess this education. Also, the other thing that I would also think about is how we can have like AI dedicated majorly to civic education, so that youth can just at the top of their head get this information where they want it. And more so, there's also a very big divide between those in the cities and the suburban areas than those in underserved community. Also, youth will probably have to do more in getting digital skills, even though we are very, very much active, very much aware of what these digital skills look like. And the government will have to come in to bridge that gap that exists already.
Very much, Victoria. I know Iben mentioned that budget has something that helps you track the spending. Are there any AI tools that you've seen in recent time that gives you hope?
Yeah, I mean, I think BeMe gives me hope as well. It's a civic tool that people can definitely use. I like that Vicky, I just mentioned now that people have access to WhatsApp. WhatsApp also has Meta AI that you can use to ask questions about basic things, and it has great coverage. Twitter or X has Grok, you know. So I think one of the good things that we're seeing with AI is that it's quite democratized. Almost everybody has their own platform, so it's not like one central person that has to give you all that info, which, I mean, leaves room for a lot of like manipulation and stuff. Now there's info everywhere, so you can try various Perplexity. There's so many of them out there, right? That you can basically use. But I think what I agree with Victoria on is that I think the role the government has to play is in ensuring that people are able to get the skills needed to like navigate these platforms, because it would only keep getting more complicated. Like, this is the least basic form of AI that we're ever going to see. Like, over the next few years, it will be embedded in everything that we do, like how we learn, how we travel, everything, basically, you know. So I think that to ensure that our own like young people and our own generation is not left behind, and the generation coming after us, right, I think the government needs to think about ways where we can embed digital skills, digital learning and innovation into our curriculum. I think we've said this so many times, right, for so many years, and I'm not sure why there's not been as much. I think there's some action, but it's not just fast enough. I know the government also launched the 3MTT training that the office of the commissioner of the minister, sorry,
Honorable Minister for
digital economy. Yes, so he had learned that training. I think that's a sort of like a prototype of what can happen if you embed that into our schools. So instead of having like interventionist programs, I think let's have it as a more structural level. Let's have it in our schools. Let's teach it as part of like how we teach green, white, green, one of the colors of Nigerian flag. Let's teach them how people can use AI, you know, in our primary schools, our basic education. I think that's one way to ensure that our generation can actually catch up, because what happens now is that you finish school and then you have to go build these skills as additional skills. But if it's added to the school system, I think is a more like sustainable way to be able to build a generation that can use technology generally to advance their causes and make their lives better. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Iben. Vic, let me come back to you. You've led policy dialogues at Faith Foundation when I was reading your profile. What trends do you see in youth's interest in public policy, and how can AI tools support meaningful participation rather than just being passive consumers?
I'm sorry, can you please repeat the question? I'm trying to take it in. I'm sorry.
So my question to you is, what trends do you see in youth interest in public policy? And how can AI tools support meaningful participation rather than passive consumption?
Thank you very much. I think, like, because of the disconnect that we've had between youth and politics and policy in the very long run that we've had, I think the trends that I have genuinely noticed is the fact that a lot of youth are as interested as to how much they can get at hand. And I will explain this in the way that take two. A lot of youth are interested in to the extent of how much information they have at hand. I say this because we have to do a bigger work in encouraging youth to dig deeper. A lot of youth believe on surface level kind of education. So if you are not explaining deeply, trying to get them to see, oh, this is how much public policy affects your life, this is why you need to be interested, apart from people that have picked up interest, I think, like, youths are not there yet. If we are rating it on a scale of 1 to 100, I would say maybe youths are 30 to 50%. But also, we also need to call on other youths who have developed this interest, who already know how public policy affects every aspect of their lives, to help them explain. And I'll give an example. When I was in a discussion where I had to explain to people that, oh, look at the people on this table. A lot of their youths, and they do not know that, oh, they need to do certain things and how they can easily be involved in politics. And I was telling the person by my side that at the same time, there is also the fact that older people, they understand politics, they know it. But younger people, it seems like when you are bringing your voice to the table, they say, oh, what do you know? How many years have you spent in Nigeria? Or how many years have you been on head? We also need to bridge that gap, and we need to have more intergenerational conversations that we encourage more youth to be introduced and understand public policy in the long run. In my work with Learn Politics, I've understood that education is the major thing that has helped us. Education is the major thing that has helped people to understand, oh, why they have to vote, regardless of whether their choice becomes president or not. Education is also why we are telling them that, oh, it's not just presidential elections that matter to you. You have to think of governorship elections, you have to think of Lagos, the local government election, and all of those things. Because a lot of youth just think, oh, every 4 years we are going to the polls to vote for just president. We are not thinking of who their House of Reps members are, who their Senate members are. Well, and at least a citizen of Nigeria is represented by almost up to 10 people from local to federal levels. And we need more youth, because we take about 70% of the entire population. We need more youth to understand these things. But to the extent of what youth, and in terms of trends, I do not think that youth are doing the deeper work or the bigger work to actually understand the in-depth of public policy or politics, as you may. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Victoria. It's indeed very critical that people understand that there are multiple representatives of yours, so your eye should not just be at the presidency, but right from your local level. Eben, I'll ask you, what systemic or policy reforms do you believe are urgently needed to ensure that no Nigerian youth is left out of this digital revolution?
Key. I mean, I think first, like I mentioned, the issue of education is key. So I think embedding digital literacy, digital knowledge into our curriculum is very key. I think it's very urgent. I also think that one of the things that can hinder us from being able to access this digital revolution generally is that there are two core systemic issues. And I did a research in 2017. On systemic barriers for like digital inclusion in the South, and I went to like 6 Niger Delta states to be able to do that. And again, this has been known. It's not like I'm saying anything that is new. Power and internet connection and internet connectivity are very, very key. Again, like I said, there have been strides over the past year plus by the Ministry of Digital Economy to ensure that there are more fiber optic cables being laid across the Delta. But I think that we can do a lot more. There's still a huge disparity on number of those people who are online and those who are offline, especially in rural Nigeria. So I think we need to think of power from a more decentralized way. We're thinking of power now currently from like Ganji Dam down to the states, but with the Electricity Act signed, I think we need to start, state governors, sub-nationals need to take up the challenge and start thinking of how they can generate power for their own regions. You know, I think we need to, if we don't solve power, then we can't even start thinking of having our own data centers. Because for you to really be able to like challenge and build indigenous AI, things that will be able to solve us problems, even like get more data that we can use to help generative AI think, I think you need data centers. But let's not go to data, like you need power first. Let's even fix power first, because that's really, really key. And then power and then internet connectivity. You know, I saw in news recently that the government of the United Arab Emirates got its most of its citizens, the Emiratis, access to ChatGPT as part of their citizenship. And I found it really funny because, like, yeah, that's actually what the world should be thinking of, right? Premium ChatGPT as part of their citizenship. You know, so I think that we need to start thinking of how we can get access to these platforms as not just as like nice to have, but as a must have. You know, where the world is going now, these are tools that would be embedded in all our lives. So I think access to power, I said digital inclusion and education, access to the internet and stuff like that. Let's start thinking about how in the future we build data centers to ensure that we can have indigenous companies build AI solutions that would solve our own problems as a people. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Eben. Victoria, what role should platforms like yours and platforms like Policy Shapers play in preparing young people to engage not just in elections? Because you mentioned that it starts from the local level to the federal level. But in everyday decision-making process, how can these young people engage using digital tools?
Firstly, like, I'm just even going to say, like, Policy Shapers, I know they have a policy hackathon that they do annually. And I know that youth can be involved in that. That way they can understand how to distill policy, make policy recommendations that can be submitted to the relevant MDA. For organizations like mine, M-Politics, and we are going to majorly foster political education more. We currently do this through creating courses for young Nigerians to be able to understand like different aspects of our politics, from our history till present. Also more digital storytelling and advocacy for inclusion, like Ebenezer has said, inclusion of digital skills into curriculum, expanding the curriculum on civic education for Nigeria. And we also create programs and deliver sort of resources for young citizens to be able to understand their basic human rights. From we don't have to wait for every election season before politics can be discussed, and we need to start imbibing it in the minds of young Nigerians that they can demand accountability from their local government chairpersons, from their state government chairpersons. There's also the fact that Tracker by Budget now tells you how much the federal allocation gets to your local government. And I think that that's one of the things we need to also teach young people, how to use civic tech tools to help them demand accountability, that how civic tech tools can also help them to do better, to become better citizens, to become active citizens, organize workshop, even if it's going to be fun things in the way, I'll say, for example, the Gen Z's will do and all of those things, just for them to, for information to get to them at the level of their understanding. And before we know it, we'll be able to create the depth we desire in our political conversations and in our roles and as active citizens.
Thank you very much. Eben, Vic had mentioned previously that there's an issue of a divide between urban and rural center when it comes to these digital tools. How do we ensure that digital transformation is not just urban centered, but actually reaches the grassroots youth in our country?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a very systemic question. that's a very systemic question. And I think, again, yeah, I think we need to stop thinking of central, because like one way to think of these people will now say, oh, you know, the ministry should donate laptops to people, blah, blah, blah. But in, you know, thinking away from that kind of interventionist mindset, I'm often thinking a lot about what's the systemic way to solve the problem. Thinking beyond just donating laptops and stuff, right? I think that governments at that level, so local governments, as Victoria has said, local governments, state governments need to start thinking of how they can actually solve these problems at the roots. And I've mentioned, I think one of the things that we've said consistently had been through the education space, right? We need to make sure that we can get more knowledge, more content into our curriculum that encourages these kind of skills, right? That's first. I think the second thing could then be, I think private sector organizations also need to start thinking of how they can, as part of their corporate social responsibility in these various communities, many of them will have industries, depots and stuff in the various communities, right? If I want to use the South, for example, the Niger Delta region, whether it's oil companies or any of the private sector companies that have all of these responsibilities, I think they can start thinking of how they invest as well in digital transformation and digital literacy and skills as part of their CSR, right? So if they are the ones ensuring that they are providing platforms for these people in these communities to get access to these skills, to these tools, I think it's a lot, for me, I feel it's a lot more sustainable versus just thinking of how we think, put it in the budget, line budget, donate 100 laptops to so place, and then nobody really checks what happens after that. So I think just let's have a more systemic and ecosystem-like approach to doing that. We, just as Victoria said, we've been doing policy hackathons. I think we also need to encourage innovation as well, beyond just the policy space. I think even in like saying, okay, would there be a competition this year, for example, before the year ends, how do we address the challenge of maybe like budgets, states' budgets? You know, so much focus on the federal budgets. How do we get states to get their budgets online? Can someone build an AI tool that people everywhere across the various states can use to analyze information around state budgets and advocate for this? You know, so I think just bringing it down to that local sub-national level, I think that's the kind of thinking that we need to be able to do that. So let's not just think about federal alone. Let's involve private sector, just as the NESG always does. And let's find ways to bring conversations that also take us down to the rural level, not just keeping our conversations as well within just the literate and the urban spaces.
Indeed, the NESG does bring together the private sector, galvanizes the private sector to see how to create some of the solution in partnership with the government. Thank you so much to both of you. I know we are running a bit over time, so I would ask two more questions, and these two questions will be to each of you to reflect on the two questions. So the first one would be, if you could co-design a national AI for governance toolkit for young people, what three futures would you prioritize and why? Let me start with Victoria.
I think one of the first features I will prioritize is accessibility. As much as we talk about youth, we also have youth that are people with disabilities among us. We need to prioritize accessibility. Number two is simplicity. I found recently that policy documents might be very, very hard to understand if you don't have somebody that is talking to you about those documents. So number two feature I'm going to prioritize is simplicity, and the third feature I'm going to prioritize is accessibility, as I said, but this time in terms of young people having easy access to it, say for example a WhatsApp bot, like we've said from the beginning of this conversation, that people can just be able to chat, hey, what does this recent reform mean? What does this recent policy talk about? And they are able to get those answers like at the tip of their fingers. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Victoria. Iben, same question. What three futures would you incorporate and why?
Yeah, I think Vicky has said it really, really well. I think I'll also add something that has to do with our indigenous languages as well. I think recently there was a conversation about like how much information people can get in Yoruba, in Igbo, in Hausa, but also in all the other like minority tribes, the languages of the minority tribes. So I think something that has to do with like indigenous making it accessible indigenously, making sure that people also, like, in our own languages, not just in the general way that we communicate, but also in our own languages, because that's also a way we can use to, like, preserve our history, preserve our culture, preserve our history, and also, like, preserve it for future generations, because that's also one of the challenges that we're having as a country. Yeah.
Thank you very much to both of you. And my last question to both of you is, in one sentence, and as a way of your final reflection, what does responsible digital citizenship mean to you? Let's start with Iben this time.
Yeah, responsible digital citizenship to me means that I am, one sentence is tough, but I am every day, contributing to conversations, efforts, projects that help or contribute to the kind of country I want to live in, you know, the country I want to live in as a person and the country I want to live for my own child. So that's, for me, that's responsible digital citizenship. So the conversations I engage in, the projects, everything I'm doing, really, the posts I make, the comments I make, the things I say, everything should reflect and contribute to the kind of country I want to live in and live for my child as well. Yeah.
Thank you, Iben. Victoria?
So for me, thank you, Ebenezer, for that answer. Also, I think one of the things I'll consider as responsible citizenship and digital citizenship would include using critical thinking on the kind of things I post and the kind of information I share, how I protect my privacy and the privacy of other people, engaging constructively, and also avoiding misinformation and contributing positively to the society, majorly online, but also offline. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Victoria. As AI tools become more embedded in our daily life through automation, data analytics, and digital platforms, young people must not only be users, but also be creators, innovators, and ethical leaders in the space. You've been listening to the NESG Radio podcast on this day of the World Youth Skills Day 2025. Thank you so much to our distinguished resource person, Ebenezer and Victoria, for your time. It's been an absolute and brilliant conversation with you, and I'm sure there are so many lessons to pick from this conversation and implement to make sure that no Nigerian youth is left behind, even in this digital revolution. Till we come again next time, keep being awesome. Happy World Youth Skills Day. Thank you so much, Ebenezer. Thank you so much, Victoria.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.